we've got to figure out, okay, what is the future for journalism? Do we need to, is that independence that we talked about, you know, are we regarded, despite our efforts to maintain independence, are we regarded as the liberal media or whatever? And should we behave differently to protect our country from this ethic of not caring if people lie? You can like a candidate, but I think if you don't care whether that person is lying, that's a pretty serious thing for the country, and it's something that journalism needs to work on and figure out, and I don't think we're there yet.
Welcome to It's All Journalism. My name is Michael O'Connell, here with another podcast about digital media and the people who make it. Steve Buttrey is one of my heroes in digital journalism. I think he's probably the hero of a lot of people who read the Buttrey Diary, which is a daily examination of all of the issues that many of us deal with day to day in our newsrooms. I first met Steve when he was my professor at American University. I've seen him at many conferences and had lots of conversations with him. He's been on the podcast a couple of times. His work is always inspiring to me. He's very positive about the direction journalism is headed. He recognizes that there are problems that we need to solve. But, you know, he's always been sort of a light for me in examining the work that I do. I'm grateful to have him on the podcast once again. And Steve's current job, he's the director of student media at Louisiana State University. Prior to that, he was the director of digital strategy at Digital First Media. And before that, he was in charge of community engagement at TBD.com. Today's podcast is a conversation I recently had with Steve about an article he wrote for Current.org about journalism ethics. And I start that out by asking him what inspired him to write the article.
Well, they asked me to do it. They've got a grant, and I apologize, I don't know the name of the source of the grant, but they've got a grant for a project on editorial integrity, and are looking at this and some other issues. And in fact, the whole thing might be looking at these issues of private activities. I'm not sure of the total context of the issue, but they asked me to, they're doing some commentaries on it, and they wanted me to do kind of a reported piece that would look at some of the views and issues on it. So I decided to do this questionnaire as well as some interviews, you know, with people in different positions.
Was there any particular, you know, target of the ethics that you were particularly looking at? Was it like political, or was it just in general?
It was kind of the off the clock. What are guidelines that journalists have to keep in mind in their personal activities, or if they're unrestricted in their personal activities, how might what they do in their personal activities affect their work? You know, so it's kind of the intersection between the private activities and the public responsibilities of journalism.
I know that there's been a lot of discussion about that. I mean, there's just sort of this feeling that if you're a journalist, you know, you can't take a side in something that, and there's sort of this perception that, well, maybe I shouldn't participate in just being a citizen, but there are a lot of things that we can do that are, you know, for example, that are not political, you know, like joining a political party or whatever, that contribute to this, you know, the community that you live in. And that was some of the stuff I saw in the report that you were talking about.
But even some of the non-political things are activities that can venture into areas that we report on. You know, we don't just report on politics. And so that was part of it. You know, is it okay to worship wherever you want? Well, of course, you know, virtually everybody agreed with that. But then there's a spectrum within each of the areas that I ask the questions about that they'd say, okay, yes, it's okay to worship, you know, and participate in religious activities in the community. But you know, is it okay to belong to a faith-based group that takes positions on issues that you might cover? And, you know, many more people had a problem with that issue, you know, with that point. And then in between, there are things that might affect some things, you know, that, okay, yes, you can worship wherever you want. You can even have a leadership position in your church or faith-based organization, but not if you're going to cover it, because religion is sometimes in the news, you know, and there are religion writers, and if you're a religion writer, it's going to affect what you do more than if you're a political writer, you know, where you just need to stay clear of those political issues, perhaps. So politics is sort of, okay, we recognize the conflicts as we approach them politically, but depending on what else you're going to cover, you know, okay, with your child's school, parents should be involved with their kids' schools. You know, there's plenty of evidence that creates, you know, better results for your child and everything in the school, but, you know, should you be involved with, you know, publicity for the local PTA or for a fund drive for the school and those sorts of things? That's going to create more problems, especially if you're an education writer or, you know, if you're covering education for political, you know, for a, you know, public TV station or radio, that sort of thing. So that what you cover could potentially create more issues depending on the area of private life that we're talking about.
Yeah, and one of the issues that you mentioned, or errors that you mentioned, was like serving on a homeowners association,
sure,
which in many respects, for a lot of people, it seems pretty innocuous. My own personal experience, and I took your poll, I'm breaking my anonymity on it. You know, I was the president of a homeowners association for a number of years, and there this issue came up with a company that was managing the accounts of like hundreds of homeowners associations, and ours was one of them. Fortunately, ours wasn't one of the ones that was involved in the criminal investigation that went into it. But, you know, I was in that position of, you know, well, what do I do? This is something that I recognize as a big story. You know, I brought it to the attention of the newsroom, and then pretty much I stepped back, and they, you know, they took it up and they ran with it. But, you know, it was very clear, you know, I went to meetings to represent my homeowners association. Maybe I heard something, maybe I didn't hear something, but, you know, all of that stuff was out in the public. I wasn't reporting on anything. There was somebody there to report it from the paper. So it was knowing when to sort of draw that line and when to step away from something.
Think when you're going to join a homeowners association, you know, you're thinking, okay, the stuff we do here is so trivial and small in terms of the bigger community news spotlight that we're not going to create any attention. But you weren't thinking, but this outfit that serves lots of different homeowners associations could be engaged in a criminal investigation, and then, you know, suddenly there is a potential. So the potential is always there, and one of the points of my story, and I was glad to hear from several people, is that we don't necessarily need, you know, a thou shalt not command to fit every possible situation, but we need to talk about things so that, okay, yeah, it's fine for you to be president of the homeowners association, but you should tell the boss, or if you are the boss, tell the newsroom, you know, hey, I've taken on this responsibility or whatever. You know, if there's any conflicts, we'll deal with them as they arise so that there are no surprises. And then secondly, when they arise, you discuss, okay, how do we handle this? And this goes back to the point we were making initially. We just need more good conversations about ethics. I don't think we need, you know, rules that say you should never, ever, ever do anything that could potentially involve you in a community activity that might be covered by the news, because that would isolate us from the community where you get a lot of good news tips.
Yeah, and actually,
would make for a bad and boring life. That, you know, we'd be bad parents. We'd be bad citizens. You know, we wouldn't develop personally and spiritually the way that we need to, and we wouldn't be able to attract good journalists to such a restrictive occupation.
Yeah, yeah, and with my own personal experience as the Homeowners Association, that actually particular story I mentioned turned out to be really huge, and actually, you know, the state of Virginia enacted a new laws about, you know, management of homeowners association affecting the lives of, you know, thousands of people. So suddenly something that's very minor to you suddenly turns into this big thing. And, you know, what is your ethical obligation as far as, you know, stepping back? I know that actually what ended up happening was, is like every time I got involved in a conversation with somebody, and this wasn't even connected with that particular story, but, you know, if we were at the Homeowners Association and I went and I talked to somebody in the supervisor's office, I would always say, oh, just so you know, I'm a professional journalist. I'm not talking to you in my role as a journalist, but I want you to be aware of that. If at some case something comes up and you see me across the table from you and you're going to go, oh my God, all this stuff I said to him. But, you know, I figured in those situations, it's much better to be open let people do what they may.
Yes, absolutely.
So is your idea, because, you know, we sort of talk about this and it's almost like, are you thinking of newsroom setting policy, or is it more of newsroom setting policy, but also individuals sort of policing themselves?
I think that the newsroom policies should be general principles that you should avoid involvements with things that you might cover, but disclose involvements when those things arise, that you're not prohibited from any involvement in the community, but you should avoid those that might deal with your coverage responsibilities. And, you know, so that I think a general principle of independence is good to have, but I don't think we should try to get rules that are so specific and so broad that they cover everything, because then they become too restrictive and you still won't cover everything because something will come up that you didn't anticipate.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm the head of the PTA of some school and now I'm going to start like covering the school board. Well, maybe that's not kosher. Maybe that's not something you should be doing.
Yeah. But it certainly, it might be okay for every other person on the staff than the person covering schools to have that position. And so, you know, if you took the position, you know, the volunteer position before you take the professional assignment, you certainly need to disclose it and discuss whether, you know, okay, is it time to get off the board and those sorts of things. You know, so I think a rule, you know, a policy that states the dual principles of independence, but freedom and flexibility to be involved in the community and disclosure of potential conflicts, and then, you know, conversations when those potential conflicts turn into real conflicts.
I know there's been sort of this, there's been a long, as long as I've been a journalist, there's always been this sort of taboo about any political involvement. And, you know, there've been talk in recent years, maybe it's not so recent, but of, you know, journalists shouldn't register for a particular party, or maybe they even shouldn't vote, you know, take themselves completely out of the political process.
It's the same sort of spectrum that you would find in the other areas. The not voting is the extreme, but there are some journalists who don't vote. I think most famously, Len Downey, when he was editor of the Washington Post, made a point of saying that he didn't vote. You know, the Washington Post covered a lot of elections, and politics was so much a part of its nature that he thought, as editor of the Washington Post, that he should not vote. But he didn't, and that's interesting because he was in the top position. He didn't require that his staff not vote. He said, this is my personal ethical decision that I'm not going to vote, if I'm remembering that correctly. And I think that is an extreme position. I think you should vote. But I like that you think about whether even the act of voting compromises your independence, and I like that you think about it and have those discussions, even though I would come down in a different position on that. But then, you know, registering to belong to a particular party, going if you're an Iowa voter, going to the caucuses, you know, which is more active a participation than voting in a primary. Voting in a primary, you have to register or declare yourself a member of parties in some states. Does that cross the line? I think everybody agrees that we shouldn't prohibit journalists from voting, even though some journalists decide not to vote. And I think everybody agrees that journalists shouldn't hold office, but thus shouldn't run for office. But that there are, you know, shades of difference along the way. I remember when I was at the Des Moines Register many years ago, there was a reporter who didn't cover politics, who was in a small town outside of Des Moines, and was interested in serving on the city council. And we did have a prohibition against holding public office, and he wasn't allowed to do that. You know, I think it's extreme that you have the prohibition, but an area where there is more likely to be a prohibition is holding public office. I think you will have some, you know, many place workplaces in journalism that do spell that one out.
You know, something that you kind of touched on before, journalists should be members of the community. If for no other reason, it just makes them better journalists. They're within the community. They're seeing issues firsthand. They're experiencing what's going on in their schools if they belong to the PTA or they volunteer in their neighborhood or something. It gives them a better perspective, I think.
Yes, and I think that's one of the things that makes this different from some ethical issues in journalism. You know, in the case of accuracy, you know, that's a good practice. You know, verifying and getting our facts right is something good that we want to teach journalists to do. And, you know, being careless with your facts is something bad that we want to avoid and punish when it happens. And you know, in the case of plagiarism, you know, that's an ethical violation that, you know, most newsrooms won't tolerate. And it can get you punished, including being fired right away on the first offense, again, in many newsrooms. But this independence is more a matter of weighing two good things. You know, that independence by journalists is a good thing, and community involvement by journalists is a good thing. And so what we need to do is encourage these two good things, but watch out for when they create conflict. And then deal with the conflict.
Anybody who is familiar with digital journalism is probably seen your link either in social media or has actually gone to the Buttrey Diary. It's as long as I've seen it, it's been a pretty comprehensive, and certainly much longer than I've seen it, a comprehensive sort of overview of the issues that come about daily about what's going on in our industry. And a lot of people, you know, read it, and they should if they don't read it. You know, if you're familiar with it, you know, I don't know if you want to talk about your health issues, but you've had health issues for a while. And, you know, certainly it's been admirable that you've been keeping at this. Certainly this is a very interesting time for journalists. I think every time is interesting, I guess.
Sure.
The election year, post-election, new administration coming in. What are your thoughts about where journalism is at the moment?
Your reference to my health issues. I'm dealing with a third major cancer diagnosis of my life, and this summer I was diagnosed with pancreatic cancer, and I learned in November, so we're talking right around the election.
Yeah.
Learned that had spread to my liver, we've stopped treatment. There's really not a treatment that's going to stop cancer that's spread to once it's spread from the pancreas to the liver. It's not treatable. And so the election, which was a lot for a lot of people to deal with, but you know, whether you're in politics or journalism or not, that was a jolt to a lot of people. And it happened when I was enduring a jolt of a different kind that, you know, I have to say I was less engaged with this election.
It's okay, Steve. It's just letting you know it's okay.
Than I ever have. But certainly, you know, as I'm trying to stay involved as I continue to work while the cancer plays out its course, you know, beyond the, you know, whatever you think about the candidates, there was a repudiation by the voters in this election for the value of fact-based journalism. You know, that we, meaning journalists, time and again check the facts of what candidates said and said, Donald Trump is not telling the truth. You know, that if you check the facts behind his statements, he wasn't telling the truth. And the voters kind of shrugged their shoulders and said, okay, but we want him to be president, which, of course, sets aside the fact that more of them chose Hillary Clinton. But, you know, in the states where it mattered, he got enough votes that we've got to figure out, okay, what is the future for journalism? Do we need to... Is that independence that we talked about, you know, are we regarded, despite our efforts to maintain independence, are we regarded as the liberal media or whatever? And should we behave differently to protect our country from this ethic of not caring if people lie? You know, you can like a candidate, but I think if you don't care whether that person is lying, that's a pretty serious thing for the country, and it's something that journalism needs to work on and figure out. And I don't think we're there yet.
I agree with you. Yes, you know, having a candidate who consistently lies, that's a problem. But when you get to a point where truth doesn't really matter, you know, that's a problem for us because, you know, we're supposed to be trying to find the truth in our reporting. And
yes, every journalism code of ethics that are, you know, or that I'm aware of, kind of in a different way and sometimes in the exact same way, states our core principle is seek truth and report it. And, you know, what do you do when the public doesn't care what's true?
Well, is it, you know,
they saw the fake news story, it fit their biases, so they shared it.
Right. And then that's a whole nother thing, because if you think about it, it's almost as if the delivery system was working against journalists.
Yeah.
This rapid fire minute by minute headline and, you know, the way stories are shared on social media. You know, and what you said, where people were looking more for stories that reflected their own bias and shared those. I mean, those became more of the drivers of what the issue is. But I think it's also important to think about, you know, how is the media perceived by the public at large? That, you know, case in point, at my job, if somebody sees a headline that we've reported on social media, you know, and if there's a discussion going on back and forth, at some point someone will say, oh, that's a fake news site. And it's like, well, you know, I don't think we're a fake news site. But people have come to sort of accept that if you're in opposition to X, you're fake or you're not truthful. And, you know, how do we get beyond that?
Yes, I mean, you know, once fake news became part of the discussion, it also became a way to discredit things I didn't agree with. And there's a difference between fake news that's propaganda and fake news that's got a kernel of truth that kind of got twisted or taken out of context, and you know, and something that was completely made up, and you know, not all of the fake news is political news. You know, Craig Silverman of BuzzFeed just did an interesting roundup of all the fake crime stories that were, you know, went viral in the past year that had no truth to them at all. You know, and that's just people, you know, having fun and wanting to. You know, I mean, and there's a difference also, a satire. You know, I love hearing Andy Borowitz's satire from The New Yorker or a funny story from The Onion, but most of us, when we see The Onion or we see Andy Borowitz, we know, okay, this is satire. But there's other fake news that the only humor in it is this is an attempt to see how gullible people are.
Yeah, so then it behooves the journalists, the news organizations to do their jobs, I guess, but also, and not so much maybe to placate to whatever the drivers of, you know, this industry is, whether, you know, just to feed the churn of online content. We just, you know, I think that's part of it as well. There's just so much stuff has to go through and go out and be consumed, and content that's real news is being displayed and being shared out in the same place as these fake stories or just crap. And, you know, for some people it's difficult to determine, you know, when the real news starts and when the fake news begins. It's really crappy.
Yeah, it is. It's tough times to be a journalist.
Oh, well, we'll get through it, I know. My feelings early on after the election was that this is an opportunity for us to sort of gut check and to, you know, sort of recommit ourselves.
I agree. I agree completely that you know, if we're going to become a better country, whatever that means to you, I think a better journalism institutions and practices are going to be part of whatever better becomes.
I agree. Steve, thank you for coming on the podcast. This has been great. I recommend that everybody read this latest article in The Current. Also check out the Buttrey blog, and keep an eye out for your latest. You gonna have any more posts about the hated New York Yankees?
I'm probably not finished there. Yeah, that's another one of my blogs is hatedyankees.wordpress.com. So I hope I've got another post or two is still coming there.
Yeah, I think they have just plenty of material for the Yankees to keep okay. You going for a while. But thanks a lot, Steve. It's been great.
All right, thanks. It's great to talk to you, Mike.
Next time on It's All Journalism.
We do have a point of view, and we don't, you know, when you're reporting on something like, you know, transgender use of bathrooms or the right for someone to marry whoever they want. I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, the Daily or something might call it a controversy. For us, there's no controversy. You know, there is one side that is right to this, and we're going to come out and say it. And so there's no, you know, there's no controversy about basic human rights. And I think that that's something that sometimes the other outlets might, you know, from my perspective, get wrong, whereas our papers are going to come right out and say it. Say, no, this is who we are. This is what we believe. This is what's right. This is what's moral. And we're not going to back down from saying it. There's no he said, she said here. And so that's a distinct difference between the mainstream media. And it's the point of view that's necessary. It's going to be more necessary now more than ever.
In our next podcast, I talk to the executive director of the Association of Alternative News Media, Jason Zaragoza, about their upcoming digital summit in Portland, Oregon. You've been listening to It's All Journalism, a weekly podcast about the changing state of digital news. Find out more about us and download past episodes at itsalljournalism.com. You can find us on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and Google Play. This week's podcast was produced by Nicola Grisco, web editor Amber Healy, and me, your host, Michael O'Connell. It's All Journalism is produced in partnership with the Association of Alternative News Media. Thanks for listening.
we do have a point of view, and we don't, you know, when you're reporting on something like, you know, transgender use of bathrooms or the right for someone to marry whoever they want. I mean, you know, sometimes, you know, the Daily or something might call it a controversy. For us, there's no controversy. You know, there's, you know, there is one side that is right to this, and we're going to come out and say it. And so there's no, you know, there's no controversy about basic human rights. And I think that that's something that sometimes the other outlets might, you know, from our my perspective, get wrong, whereas our papers are going to come right out and say it. Say, no, this is who we are. This is what we believe. This is what's right. This is what's moral. And we're not going to back down from saying it. There's no he said, she said here. And so that's a distinct difference between the mainstream media. And it's a point of view that's necessary. It's going to be more necessary now more than ever.